Hey guys, today's episode of Sports Spectrum's podcast is presented by our friends at Compassion International, the most trusted child development ministry in the world. We've been partners now with Compassion for numerous years. They were our first ever partner with Sports Spectrum's podcast, and we believe in the mission of what Compassion is about, releasing kids from poverty in Jesus' name. Now, recently, our home church here in Connecticut hosted a Compassion International Day, and we had Owen come and share from Africa. And Owen came and shared his testimony. He shared about him going through the Compassion program and the importance of what that child sponsorship looked like to give him a chance at hope, to give him a chance at a future. And I'm telling you, when you hear a first-person testimony from someone that's gone through the Compassion program, it really does move you. And we've been sponsoring children with Compassion for many, many years. And yet, when I hear that testimony, it's just another reminder to me of why it's so important to get involved with what Compassion International is doing. You can go to the website, compassion.com/sportsspectrum. Compassion.com/sportsspectrum. You'll see a list of children there, kids from Peru, Colombia, Ethiopia, Kenya, Sri Lanka, the Philippines. They are waiting for you to sponsor them, a child sponsorship program unlike any other. Over 2.2 million children are part of Compassion's program. It's trusted. It's been the most trusted charity since 1952. And again, I can't stress enough how important it is that your donation, your sponsorship can help release a kid from poverty and do it in Jesus' name. Check out compassion.com/sportsspectrum to learn more and to sponsor a child today.
Welcome into the Sports Spectrum podcast, where we bring Jesus into the sports conversation. Here's your host for today, Jason Romano.
Hi guys, welcome to Sports Spectrum. It is wonderful to have you joining us here on the show today. My name is Jason Romano. Our website is sportsspectrum.com. That is the place to go each and every day for updated content, devotionals, podcasts, testimonials, articles on different athletes and coaches and others in the world of sports intersecting with faith. Make that a place to go each and every day. sportsspectrum.com. You can also reach me directly. My email address, jason@sportsspectrum.com, if you'd like to reach me directly, jason@sportsspectrum.com. Now, today on the show, we welcome Don Munson to Sports Spectrum. He is the director of broadcasting with the Clemson Tigers. And he actually corrected me at the very beginning of this interview because I called him the voice of the Clemson Tigers since 2014 with regards to the football program. And he corrected me because there's another legendary voice that he'll tell you about that actually should be deemed the voice of Clemson Tigers football. But Don has been the play-by-play voice for Clemson football since 2014. And it's kind of a pretty good year when you think back to all the success Clemson has had. It really started in that 2014-2015 year. And he tells some great stories about his relationship with Dabo Swinney from Clemson and a really interesting story that goes back all the way, I believe he said, to 2010, when Dabo saw what was happening with this Clemson Tigers program and told Don Munson, our guest today, something that was very profound. So that's a really interesting story. Don Munson also grew up with Billy Graham and his family, the legendary Billy Graham. So he's got some stories there to share as well. And a really powerful, poignant conversation about being a dad to a special needs daughter. Don Munson is dynamite. What a fantastic guy. And really knew about him, had certainly listened to him, but never got to talk to him in the way that we did today on the show. And this is really one of my favorite conversations as we gear up for college football starting in a week or two. It is wonderful to have Don Munson on the show today. Let's take a listen to our conversation with Don right now on Sports Spectrum. Don Munson, welcome to Sports Spectrum. How are you, sir?
I am great. Appreciate you having me on. Always good to to visit like this, and our first time actually getting to see one another, but appreciate you having me on.
Absolutely. It's great to talk to you. It's a great time of year. College football is just a couple weeks away. You are the voice of the Clemson Tigers, and anytime you say Clemson, you know it's an exciting time of year, and Dabo always has his team, you know, as one to watch and one to contend with. Let me ask you about how you're feeling about this year's football team before we get into your journey and in your career.
Sure. What one correction I'm going to make right away. I'm not the voice of the Clemson Tigers. Jim Phillips, all right, who was here for 33 years and behind a microphone, he will always be the voice of the Clemson Tigers. Jim was a guy that kind of mentored me when I was young and upcoming and here at Clemson when I first got my start back in 94 with Clemson Radio. So Jim will always, unfortunately, he passed away in 2003 during the football season in 2003. But I've been privileged to sit behind his mic and sit in his chair really, I guess, since 2014, and am just terribly excited about the upcoming season here for Clemson. You know, I think it's going to be one that I think you could expect Clemson to be right there in the mix and hopefully get an opportunity to make the playoffs and then an opportunity, if they can, to make it to L.A. and play for a national championship.
Yeah, you get a little spoiled when you have so much success for so many years. And then you look back at last year and you're like, that wasn't a good season. And I'm like, most teams would have taken last year if they were looking back at a regular season like that. But there's higher expectations now at Clemson.
There are. And that's not a bad thing. You know, Coach Sweeney, and you've had him on with you, you know, best is the standard. And that incorporates a lot of things. You know, a lot of people look at that phrase and they're not sure how to take it, but that's what he expects. He expects the best out of everybody, every day, every play. And you know what? But he also says, listen, if you go out there and just give me your best, I don't care what the scoreboard says. I just want you to give me, the result doesn't matter. Just give me your best. And that's what kind of happened, I think, last year, is that there were a lot of injuries that happened, and somehow this was still a program that finished a way to get to 10 wins, and it was amazing, and culture did that. It was the culture that Dabo Sweeney has instilled within the Clemson program that did it.
You obviously know Coach Sweeney incredibly well, having been around the program for a while. What is it about him that is such – I know there's some polarization out there, certainly from the world, but I'm intrigued by the fact that he's successful. He's an amazing leader. When we did have him on and talk to him and feature him last year, a lot of humility, even though a lot of confidence at the same time. Tell me about Coach Sweeney, maybe even the relationship that you have with him.
Well, I think the thing that makes Dabo Sweeney is first of all, is he knows exactly where his anchor holds. He knows exactly where his anchor holds. And that's never going to change in him. That's the reason that he wears the faith on his sleeve, because he is a big believer in what, you know, God has done for him through his son, Jesus Christ, much the same way that I am. And yeah, that's never going to change with him. And then I think the other thing is that he has a tremendous belief in and of himself. You go back and you look at the backstory and what he came out of. You know, obviously his dad was an alcoholic. There was an abusive relationship that was there within the family. He has two older brothers that are out there as well. One of them that actually works with him, the oldest brother, Tracy, that works here at Clemson with him. But there's all kinds of backstories that's there. And believe me, he comes from a dysfunctional family. And that if there's anybody that shouldn't succeed, it's probably William Christopher Sweeney because of the dysfunctional family that he can't. But he put all that behind him. And all he cares about is, you know, what's today? Tomorrow's already passed. All I can do is take care of today. What can I do today to better myself, to make this program the best, and to keep pushing forward? And that's the way that he looks at life. And I love that attitude. I just absolutely love that. And he's pretty simplistic in the way that he goes. It's not very complicated. Matter of fact, he tries to keep it simple for that purpose, because you never know what's going to come at you day to day. You know, I always kid around with him. He told me one time, listen, I got a thousand problems a day, and it's my job to get through them. And you know, when you are managing a roster of 120 players and you've got, you know, another 50 or 60 people that are in your building that you're also kind of managing it, you know, you have a thousand problems a day, but he gets through it pretty well.
Yeah. And it's so fascinating. When we featured him, it was clear he doesn't you don't want to say pay attention. The noise comes in waves in terms of media, but he really is just focused on what is taking place inside that building. I was very impressed in how he limits distractions. You know, he's not on social media or anything like that, but he has the 1,000 problems that he deals with in his building, but I don't see a whole lot of distractions from outside because he's so focused on what's going on inside.
No, and that's exactly right. There is no noise. He doesn't hear any noise. It's like he's just deaf to all of it. The only noise that he hears is his own that he makes. And I love that. You know, he just doesn't let anything of outside influence affect him. And I wish that more of us could live that way. You know, if you not little rabbit trail here, but that's the problem that's with our country. That's the problem that's with our worlds. We let too much noise out from the outside affect us with what's going on in our own world. So we need to take care of that first. But he's amazing. When I first got to know him, he showed up here in 2003. So I kind of knew him, you know, at that point in time as he was an assistant coach. And then when Coach Bowden stepped away midway through the 08 season is really when our relationship amped up, because I was hosting the coaches radio shows and that kind of stuff. So we kind of hit it off. And then I actually went to work for him in 2010 as part of his support staff and worked for 4 years underneath him. He affectionately called me his handler. So my job was the marketing and messaging of Clemson football. And it was, you know, overseeing all the social media, you know, Twitter back in 2010 now. Just cranking up. Facebook was just cranking up. Instagram didn't even exist. So all that. But he had the foresight to realize what the input and what the effect was going to be upon his program. And so for 4 years, I kind of did all that stuff for him. And I was, he had his own Twitter account at that. And I said, you need to get off. You need to shut that down. Let's, you know, we need to have a Clemson football account. If, you know, if you need something said, let's say it through. But don't say it through your own account, because there was already too many coaches at that time back in 2010 that were just, you know, putting their foot in their mouth. And you don't need that when you're heading up a major program, for sure.
Well, like you said, you got 1,000 problems to deal with. You don't want to be one of those 1,000 problems yourself in how you manage that. So I'm curious, you've been a part of this program a long time. What's been your favorite season? I remember being in Tampa in 2016 at that game. Actually, it was 2017, early 2017, when Clemson won the first national championship there with that team. And it was awesome to be a part of. And I would say they were underdogs that in that game. I don't remember the spread or the lines or anything like that. But it was like overcoming this hump, beating the mighty Alabama, and Dabo getting his first championship, pointing to Jesus. I guess I'm giving you my favorite season, just thinking about what they've accomplished. Was that your favorite season? And if not, what was your favorite season that you've been with Clemson?
Well, I guess you could – there's – you know, different ways of saying that, because I've been involved here in Clemson in so many different, you know, ways. You know, started back in 94, I was just part of a radio crew at that time. Didn't go to the home games. Matter of fact, I was always in studio, so never went over to the stadium or anything like that. You know, by the time that I joined the staff in 2010, you know, we actually had a losing season in 2010, my first season with Coach Sweeney, we lose to South Florida. We lost to Skip Holtz in South Florida in the Meineke Car Care Bowl in Charlotte, North Carolina, to finish 6-7. And that was the first losing season that Clemson had in a while. But it was also one of the most amazing things that I witnessed, because I'm walking with him down to the press conference, you know, afterwards. And he goes in that press conference and he said, I know that this season didn't go the way that any of us wanted to, but I saw things. And I'm just telling you, we're about to embark on the greatest decade in Clemson football history.
Wow.
You know, if you ask people that now, you know, raise your hand if you believe Dabo Swinney at that time. Not too many of us are going to raise our hands, but he did. He believed it, and he almost willed it into effect. But probably my favorite season was my first behind the microphone for Clemson. That was 2014. I mean, it was, for me, I'm 52 years old. This is a young guy's business, all right? This is a play-by-play stuff is a young man's deal. And at 52, I thought, all right, it probably had passed me by. Had an opportunity 10 years prior at Clemson, or not quite 10 years prior, but when Jim passed away, but they decided to go a different route. And so, you know, for 10 years, I was kind of, you know, out there floundering a little bit, but God had a plan. And it was amazing to see what what he did in that 10 years to then to get me to where he got me. And then it's been a blast. I mean, it's just been an absolute blast doing it. But I would say that first year out, my very first game was between the hedges against Georgia. So no better way to open it up than Clemson and Georgia. Now, obviously, the season didn't end in a national championship, but I loved everything about that first season. And I try to remember that first season as much as I can, you know. But since, I will tell you this, since 2014, I've seen Clemson lose once at home. Yeah. Once at home. And I mean, it's amazing.
Yeah, it's been quite a run. I do want to go back to 2016 just for a second because
sure,
not every voice, I don't want to call you the voice, I don't mean to say that, but not everybody who's a play-by-play guy for a program gets to call a national championship game in a moment like that. You know, at that moment when you're catching the touchdown and you're winning the game. And I even went back and listened to your call of that game. And at the very end, I think, you know, I don't know who your color guy was, but he was saying, this game is over. And you were like, well, wait a minute now. There's still 2 seconds left. It was like you want to rejoice and go crazy when Hunter Renfrow makes that catch. But at the same time, you still stay professional. But that's a moment every broadcaster dreams about. You had to have been thinking about that as you were preparing for that game.
Well, I mean, there's no doubt about it. It's something that I've dreamt about probably since I was a kid. My dad, who passed away in 12, he used to tell me all the time. I was born in Atlanta in 1962. So 1967 is the World Series, and it is Cardinals and Red Sox. And apparently I'm in the backyard as dad's throwing me the ball, as, you know, dads and sons do. And I'm doing a running play-by-play of the 67 World Series, all the players. And he said, the most amazing thing was that you were five and that, you know, you think everybody's hitting a home run. He said, that wasn't the way it was with you. You would have guys lining through the hole left side or dribbling it to second base and being thrown out at first.
You know, 5 years old, Don.
Yeah, 5 years old and doing it. That's when my dad was a Presbyterian minister. So, but he said, that's when I probably should have realized what you were going to go into. And do so. I've, in some way and shape or form, I've been probably dreaming about that moment. But now to think that, you know, I've been in, you know, it's amazing what has happened. I mean, I've called, the only thing on my bucket list that I haven't called is a Rose Bowl from a college football standpoint. I don't know that we will ever get to a Rose Bowl, but, you know, maybe we will. But, you know, to think that I've done Orange Bowls, that I've done Sugar Bowls, that, you know, that I've done national championship games, done semifinal games. You know, it's amazing what has happened. And the greatest thing is the best is yet to come. I mean, I'm a Sweeney disciple of that. The best is yet to come. I'm 60 right now, but I'm just telling you, the best is yet to come for my broadcast career. And I'm excited for what's ahead of me.
Don Munson is our guest here on Sports Spectrum, the intersection of sports and faith. And you talked about your faith in the Lord. It's strong. It's important to you. You even mentioned your dad being a Presbyterian minister, which I have to imagine has a big impact on your faith. Let's talk about that and the impact that Christ has had on your life.
Well, yeah, sure. It's funny. I was born in Atlanta, but I call Montreat, North Carolina, home. My folks built a house in Montreat in 1962. We use it as a summer residence until 1972. We moved there full time in 72. My dad took a job with what at that time was a junior college there, Montreat Anderson there. And then it developed into a 4-year school in 78. However, my dad took an associate pastor's job over in Hendersonville, North Carolina at First Presbyterian Church there in Hendersonville. And so off we moved to Hendersonville, but we kept the house in Montreat. But Montreat's what I will always call home. Montreat, home of the Billy Graham Association. So I grew up with the Graham kids. Ned, the youngest, was one of the closest in age to me. Franklin, who heads up the Graham ministry now. Franklin, probably about 5-6 years older, I guess, than I am. And I still see him from time to time. One of my good friends is actually the head of security for Franklin, a guy named Billy Davis, who played on the 1981 national championship team here at Clemson. And Billy and I have gotten to know each other extraordinarily well. But, you know, so that's where, you know, and it's amazing because of all of that, and just because of the path, the people that have been set up in my, you know, in my surroundings that I've been able to grow up at the feet of. You know, Billy Graham, when I was a kid, you know, we didn't know Billy Graham. He was just Dr. Graham. We didn't know, you know, and he would come fish with us. He would go camping with us. He would, you know, we'd go trick-or-treating at his house. He'd come down, play softball or football with us. You know, we did, again, we didn't know. But it's amazing, you know, what you kind of all of a sudden realize, the people that you get your life surrounded by because of really your parents' influence, both my mother and my father. My mother was thick as thieves with Ruth Graham, Billy's wife. And so, you know, the two of them were extraordinarily close. My mom passed away just last August, but you know, it's amazing when you look at it. And I came to a faith in Christ at a very young age, you know, to the point where I can't tell you that definite date. I just can't tell you, but I know what I believe. And like what I said about Coach Sweeney, I know where my anchor holds. And that's important in my, it's the most important thing in my life. It's way more important than my job. My job is actually third in my life because I have a wife that I've been married to for 38 years. We've been dating for 43. We have a child that's 31 and she has special needs. And let me tell you, my wife and my child are way above my job, but they're not to the point where my faith is. You know, I think that's the thing that's taught us in scripture. You better not have anything ahead of God because he is a jealous God and he wants everything from me. And so that's what I have to try to do each and every day is make sure that I do give him my all.
I did read or hear somewhere too that you mentioned your dad. He was influential in your radio background and your broadcast background as well, right?
Yeah, he actually worked for a gentleman by the name of George Manfred Gutsky, who had his own radio ministry. Manfred was from Manitoba, and so was from Winnipeg. I think was home for him. But now we didn't live in Manitoba at that. But Dad worked for in his radio ministry that was based out of Atlanta back in the 60s at that time. And, you know, George Gutsky was, if you don't know who George Gutsky is, look him up. He was a great, great minister, great man of faith, big, burly guy, just big. And the biggest, longest eyebrows that have ever existed in the face of the earth. And that was his calling card. As a matter of fact, but just a delightful man to be around. And even as a young kid, you know, I could know he was a big teddy bear and like almost like a grandfather to me in a lot of ways, but just had an, you know, a really, a, you know, again, maybe at the age when you start realizing what's kind of going on around you, 3, 4, 5, you don't understand the input that people are having on you at that point in time, but you do as you get older and that will, I'll see George again. I'll see Manfred again, and we'll get to spend eternity with him. And that will be a great reunion at that time.
When did you realize that this was something that you were pretty good at? And I say that with all humility. Obviously, the career you've had, you know, you've had an amazing career. But there's a humility, obviously, and a posture of that I can sense in you. But you know you're good at it, or else you wouldn't have done it for so many years. Was there a moment when you saw the fork in the road and you were like, yep, I think I'm going to head down, other than being 5 years old and calling the 67 World Series? I mean, come on, Don. But, you know, is there a moment when you thought, oh, this is a job I could actually pursue and do?
That was probably in college, my sophomore year in college. My first year, I went to King College in Bristol, Tennessee. Then I transferred into Appalachian State in Boone, North Carolina. For my sophomore year. And it was really my roommate, a guy named Mike Gore, that was, we decided we both transferred to App at the same time. He was a high school friend of mine, very close high school buddy of mine. And we decided, okay, we're going to transfer. Let's get an apartment together. We'll room together. And Mike was the one that said, hey, he came to you and said, you know, I'm going to go to the student radio station meeting. You got to come with me just to see what this is about. I think I was a business major at the time and all that kind of stuff. So I went and immediately fell in love with it. And it didn't take me long to change my major. So that was my sophomore year in college. But probably sometime during my junior or senior year at App was when I realized, okay, I've got an opportunity, you know, if I want to pursue this. And again, the way that God works is it was somebody that called me that gave me my first job in radio after I graduated from Appalachian State. My wife and I, both were at App. Elizabeth had another year to go when I graduated in 84. So we get married. I didn't have a job. We got married 2 weeks after I graduated, went off on a 2 week honeymoon, came back, spent about a week at her parents' house. And then we had to move into student housing in Boone in late June of 84. And so we get there, we're moving in. And one of my buddies in Boone calls me that night that we're moving in and says, "Hey, our sports director walked out of the radio station yesterday. If you're here tomorrow, I'll introduce you to the general manager. Think I can get you." And that's the way it happened. I literally went down the next day. Elizabeth and I thought, all right, we'll see each other maybe on the weekends. I thought I was maybe going to go to work for a television station somewhere. I'd intern with a television station, thought that was a possibility. But it ended up that I went right into radio work, and that allowed me to start doing play-by-play for high schools and then also basketball-wise for Appalachian late fall and then through that winter. And that's where it started. And $210 a week, baby, in 1984. And it was, man, and we were living large. I mean, we just absolutely loved it.
You would have done it for $100 a week, right?
Because you loved it so much. Oh, yeah, no doubt. I did. You know, the money didn't care. You know, the money was not the reason. It was just, you know, I had an on-air shift and I was doing production and, you know, everything that you would expect a 22-year-old snot-nosed kid who kind of thought he knew everything that, you know, they had to do. And it was brilliant. I mean, it's still part of me and part of my fiber to this day.
Do you still have, I would assume, cassettes from those years? Because I found cassettes from my college years, Don, in 1995 is when I graduated college. And I listened to those recently, and I was a producer for many years at ESPN, so I wasn't on air. But I listened to those college tapes, and I just put my head in my hand and said, what in the world was I thinking? I'm wondering if you've listened to some of those.
No. I have cassette tapes that are still back there. And oh yeah, we will laugh. Sometimes I see Mike. I talk to Mike probably about once or twice a month. He lives up in Hendersonville, North Carolina, not far from Clemson. So we still talk. And occasionally he'll stumble across a cassette, or I'll stumble across, and we'll be together. And my car now does not have a cassette player anymore. You know, we used to have cassette players in cars, and we would play and we would just laugh. Oh, we would just like, you know, we just, but oh yeah, you go back and you listen to somebody. I try to go back actually and listen to every broadcast that I do, to be perfectly honest with you. So as a way to kind of self-critique myself. And then I have some guys actually that I will send 15, 20 minutes worth of stuff to about two or three times a year, just to, all right, what are you hearing? What can I do better? And how can I get better in what I do? And they've been of tremendous help to me.
Now that's a really great nugget right there, I think, for those listening, because you've been in this business a long time and you said you're 60 years old and you're still sending your work for feedback. That's still, that's awesome to me that you're still seeking feedback at 60.
Oh, you have to. It's the only way you can get better. I mean, I hear, oh, you're great at what you do. I'm okay. You know, I'm okay, but I want to be better. And I think that's, again, that's part of life, is that you've got to want to be better. You've got to wake up every day wanting to be better, figuring out a way to get, even if it's just a 10th of a percent, just right, go do it. And I figure out a way. But you know what? Do I still have goals at 60? Doggone right, I still got goals. There's still things that I want to do in this business that I haven't done yet. The only way I'm going to do that is getting better. And what will get me noticed is being better and being the best of the best. You know, that's my goal at some point in time, is to have my name associated with, all right, you know what? This dude, he's the best of the best. That's where I want to be.
One of the other things that I know is your pride and joy. You mentioned her, your daughter, Michelle. You mentioned that she's special needs. And it made me think about this job and this role. And I know you've had a unique role in the sense of what you've been able to do for so many years. But how did your job, or maybe even your perspective change when you became a dad, when Michelle came into the picture, and suddenly it's not just about Don Munson anymore and the job that he wants?
Well, it's funny because when Michelle born in August of 91, and she spent the first 10 days of her life in neonatal in the hospital in Asheville, North Carolina. First 3 to 4 days of that were very touch and go, whether or not she was going to survive. But she proved to be a fighter, and we got her out. you know, like about 10, 12 days, something along those lines, got her home. But we realized she started taking physical therapy. She wasn't even 24 hours old and she was already taking physical therapy. She was born with what's called congenital myotonic muscular dystrophy. For those of you that don't know, there are well over 60 different types of muscular dystrophy that are out there. That's the spectrum. You know, everybody just associates it with Duchenne's muscular dystrophy, which is the most common type that affects males primarily. It's not very common in females. And actually, for a female to have muscular dystrophy is a little bit of a rarity. We're beginning to see more and more of it. But Michelle, and then at the age of 4, she's then diagnosed with autism. So now, and at that time, here's the way God works. All right, so we move here in 95 to the Greenville area of South Carolina in 95. We have not even been here a week, and that's when Michelle gets the diagnosis of autism. We'd already had it scheduled, and she went back up and was going to have the testing there. And so Elizabeth was with her. I had to be at work because for my work, and she called me. And what's the plan of attack? Now what's the plan of attack? Because now she's got, you know, right? You got something else that's thrown in there. The only guy, one of like 6 doctors in the entire world that had worked with kids with a child that was both autistic and also had congenital myotonic muscular dystrophy was right here in Greenville, South Carolina.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
It was right here in Greenville, South Carolina. That's the way God works. So he put us in the right place at the right time. He knew what was coming and it was amazing. And so we got associated with him and Michelle started taking services from him. She still does physical therapy, occupational therapy to this day, even at the age of 31, she's going 3 times a week and doing all of that, but she's great. She's a joy of our lives. Elizabeth has, unfortunately, has been pregnant 2 other times. We've lost both of those children. It's my belief that I'll see those children at some point in time because they're souls.
Yes.
So I will see them at some point in time. But you know what? Right now we have the one and she's the delight of our household. And there's a lot that's obviously circled around her. She loves coming to basketball games here at Clemson. It's about a 2.5 hour. That's pretty good for her. Football games are way too long. We did take her to the Orange Bowl, 1 year, with us. And that was a blast. She had a blast there. I got to know folks at the Orange Bowl and they kind of helped set us up in a box where we could put her and all. And she had an absolute, but her biggest joy was actually riding the media bus from the media hotel back and forth. Cause we had a police escort. And so we were flying through the street. She loved that. That was the biggest part of her day was going and coming from the game.
Yes.
But it's just small things like that. And she keeps me pretty grounded to realize that it's not the big things in life. It's the little things in life that you need to really, really take advantage of and stop and smell the roses when you can.
Well, that might be the answer to the next question I was going to ask you, but how have you seen your relationship with Christ grow or evolve even since Michelle came into the picture?
Oh yeah. So when Michelle got the diagnosis of autism, I was a mess. I mean, I was Elizabeth, like I said, she was up in Asheville. She was there with her folks, was going to spend the night in Hendersonville, which is where her folks live, and then come back down to Greenville the next day. I mean, but Elizabeth called me and it broke me. I mean, it shattered me. She goes, she'd already had enough. So I can remember getting on my knees and, you know, and for some reason, God brought to my mind, hey, you know what? All of my servants at one time, but, you know, and he brought to me David. And all I could think about was David there praying for the child that he was going to have with Bathsheba, that was committed in maybe the worst shape. You know, not only did he commit adultery with Bathsheba, but oh, by the way, then he had her husband killed, put her in a position where he was going to be murdered. This is David we're talking about. All right. This is right. David. All right. So, but that's what, as I was praying, that was, you know what? I've got you. That I've not made a mistake here. Believe me, I've got you. And so from that point on, it was like, all right, let's see where this is going to take me. It's been a marvelous way for both Elizabeth and I to witness to other. We become support parents inside Muscular Dystrophy Association. Michelle, for several years, was an MDA ambassador, which meant she went around to all of these different events and collected checks from the Muscular Dystrophy Association. Our biggest was at the fall brawl up in Asheville in the mid 90s with WWE. Yeah. That was a blast. We had a blast up there. And they WWE gave a check for $400,000 that Michelle accepted from the Muscular Dystrophy Association. Wow. We used to do the MDA telethon that Jerry Lewis, you know, did and all that kind of stuff. And then with autism, we've also become support parents with autism. And I've actually had a couple of friends of mine, not that have had autistic children, but it taught me how to handle that have had special needs children. And, you know, they saw me and they called me, and it's, you know, I've had to talk some of them off a cliff before, but it's been a great way to be able to not to share what my faith is, to share the foundation that I have, and, you know, to share with others that, yeah, there is a God that's out there. And he does love you. I think that's the other thing that I will tell you within the Christian community, within my own life, is that sometimes, you know, we say this word love and we think that, hey, brother, I love you. Well, you know what that means? That means getting in there in the thick and thin with people. That means getting in there. And sometimes that means you have to have the voice of rebuke, because that's love. When you rebuke somebody and you do it in the proper way, you're doing that because you want the best for them. You want the best. And that's also in a way that, you know what, you just need to love up. Sometimes you just need to hug somebody. You need to love up on them and let them sob on your shoulder. Let them pour out to you. There are all kinds of ways of loving up on people. And I think that so often we see it as just the soft side. Sometimes there's a hard side to love. And that's the way that God deals with us. He's never going to give us more than we can handle, but sometimes he's going to put stuff on our plate. They weren't like, that's spinach. I don't want that. But sometimes you got to down it. You got to have at, and it makes you better, and it toughens you up, but it also helps you handle situations.
One of the ways I've noticed with you too, we mentioned about Coach Sweeney in social media, but you're on there and you post a lot of encouragement, a lot of scripture, certainly a lot of your work and the role with Clemson as well. But why has that been a place for you to be open about your faith?
Because social media is such a cesspool.
Yes, it is.
So yes. It's a cognitive effort on my part. I try to put up something each and every day. Now, I don't do it each and every day, but I try to put something up each and every day that's going to be either something that has come from my quiet time. I'm a big Charles Spurgeon reader. Love everything. I do a daily devotional every day with Spurgeon. I love that. I try to do a biblical reading morning and night. And I try to find it. Sometimes there's something in there, you know, that I look and find. But I'm going to try to post something positive each and every day. And usually it's going to be Christ-centered when I do that, because you never know who is out there. And I've had plenty of people that have reached out to me. It was funny. One of the things that I did during COVID, and it was after my mom passed away, actually. So at the end of COVID, as we were coming at it last August, and as we were headed into the holiday season, I posted a video up and I said, hey, listen, this is a tough time. This next 30 days becomes a tough time. After you pass by Thanksgiving, you're headed towards Christmas. That's a tough 30 days for a lot of folks that are out there because they've lost loved ones or whatever. And so I posted up and I said, here's my telephone number. And I gave out my cell phone number. I do that all the time. 864-483-6894. That's my cell phone number. 864-483-6894. And call me, right? Call me. If you're watching this, you need to feel like you just need somebody to talk to, call me. I'm available 24/7, 365. Not going to turn down your phone call. And I've actually had a gal that was in the service that called me from Alaska, 22, 23 years old. And she called me and she said, I just want to thank you for posting it up. I think I put it up on my Instagram and Twitter account, maybe even Facebook. But it was, and I had thousands of responses from that all over the place. And it was amazing to sit back and watch that sometimes it's just the one thing that you can post up there that you just never know when you're going to impact somebody's life, when you're going to be able to touch somebody. And that's our job. That's my job as a follower of Christ is to do that, is to try to touch people, to be able to share the message of Jesus Christ with them, that there is forgiveness, that there is a God that loves you out there, that there is a better way, that there also is a devil, and that there are demons, and that they are going to fight you every inch of the way, and they're going to continue to do things in your life. Devil continues to throw arrows at me all the time, but the more that I believe and the more that I strengthen my faith, the less those arrows have a tendency to come at me, is what, because I'm protected by God. I am protected by Christ. You know, it's, have you took notice of my servant Job? Have you seen him? Well, you know, God allows him to get attacked, but then what happens? Job comes out the other side way better for than when he would, even though he had to go through devastating loss, he comes out the other side remarkably better.
Yeah. You gave your phone number out. It's funny. I heard everything you had to say, but yet my mind goes back to you gave your phone number out. And I think that's great. I really do. I wish more people would do that and be more open, but we're such a guarded group of people now.
Why?
I don't know. Why? Like Bob Goff. Do you know who Bob Goff is, the author?
No.
So Bob Goff wrote an amazing book called Love Does, and he's a believer, and his books have impacted a lot of people. He's a best-selling author. On the back of his book, he puts his cell phone. And he says the same thing you said. Listen, if you're going through something, call me. And he answers the phone. It's him. It's not some weird phone number that goes to a text message thread or whatever. It was him. And he's the only other guy that I've ever heard in 5 years of doing the show give out his number, just because he says, I'm available. I'm open. I'm willing. And if you call me, great. And if I'm busy, I didn't answer it, leave a message and we'll figure this out. I just love that, Don. It's so foreign, I guess. That's why my reaction is this way.
Well, here's what I'll tell you. If you jotted down my phone number and you're thinking about calling me, all right, and you don't, you know, you're not a Christian, you don't believe in this God, doesn't mean that we can't communicate. Doesn't mean that we can't get along. That's the other thing that I think is really wrong with this world right now is that, hey, if you're not of the same mindset that I, and if you disagree with me, man, you're just an awful human being. No, I'm not. Yes, no, I'm not.
Exactly.
And neither are you. That's right. If I don't agree with you and you, this, you're not an awful human being. You know, we're so messed up. I keep kidding my wife all the time. I'm running for senator at some point in time. I've decided I don't want to be president of the United States. I want to be senator. It's the best job in America. Being a senator in the United States of America, easily the best job in America. At some point in time, I'm going to do that. She's, oh, you'll never get elected. You're too conservative. That's what's going to get me elected, because I am that conservative, and because I do care for people, and because I realize my own faults, and because I realize what I have been through and my experiences and what I also do. But the biggest reason is because I think that God has a plan for me and for my life. And I say that I kid my wife, but the more I mention this to people, the more I have them telling me, yeah, I'm 60 right now and I love what I'm doing. But I have a feeling that God may be working in my life, and at some point in time, he actually may have me do it. And I think that I'm in a great place in the state of South Carolina to do it. But we'll see. We'll see what happens.
The best is yet to come, right, Don?
Best is yet to come. And I love it. And I don't know what's to come. And that's the part that excites me the most, is to see what does happen. I want to see what the future has in store for me, because I know God's plan for me is pretty doggone good. Yeah. It's way better than my plan for me. That's for sure.
That's it. And it'll be fun to watch what his plan is for this season. And it'll be fun to watch what his plan is down the road for you, Don Munson. Thanks for being here. Thanks for sharing your heart. And I just really appreciate your story and you coming on the show. Thanks so much for joining us.
I appreciate you having me. You reaching out, brother. Hopefully we get an opportunity. Now, you need to come to Clemson.
Never been. And I told you, know, my friend, Richmond Weaver, you know, Richmond Weaver, right?
Oh yeah. Well,
great friend.
You've got a source, you've got tickets. All right. Anytime you want to come, we'll got you taken care of. You come up here, you visit with us. You can kind of see what all of this is about. It is an awesome experience to come to. And I realize that I look at through things orange through orange colored glasses. It's the best atmosphere in all of college football. It's an absolute blast, and you will have just a grand time if you come up and see us.
Don, count me in, and hopefully maybe even this year. We'll see how soon we can turn this around. But it's been on my bucket list for a long time to come down and hang out at Clemson for a weekend during a game, and you just made the offer, so I'm going to take you up on it, my friend.
And we're going to take great care of you. We'll treat you like a king.
That would be amazing. Thanks for being here, buddy. I really appreciate you.
All right. Appreciate it. God bless all of you.
And super thankful to Don Munson for being our guest today on Sports Spectrum. What a great guy. I think this is a guy you want to cheer for and root for. I love the mindset that at 60 years old, the best is yet to come. I thought that was inspiring for me as I'm getting set in about a month or so to turn 49. Don Munson is, 12 years ahead of me or whatever it is, 11 years ahead of me. And he still believes the best is yet to come for him. So I'm going to believe that on my end as well. I love the love and compassion that he has for his daughter, raising a special needs daughter in Michelle, and him and his wife Elizabeth doing a great job there. And then talking about Christ being his anchor, and using even social media in the way that he's encouraging people. Oh, by the way, he gave out his phone number. I'm not going to repeat it, but you can go back and get it if you need to. And the fact that he gave out his cell, he's an open book. And I would be fascinated to know if anybody actually calls him listening to this podcast and hear the encouragement that Don Munson might have provided them just by listening to this show. So who knows what God's going to do, but I really enjoyed talking to Don Munson, and I hope you enjoyed it as well. So thanks for tuning in today. Again, a couple things. Make sure you go to our website, sportsspectrum.com. That's the home base. That's the place each and every day for content related to Sports Spectrum. You can also sign up for our weekly newsletter when you're there. You can also subscribe to our quarterly magazine, the Sports Spectrum magazine, which featured Dabo Swinney on the cover 1 year ago. And then make sure whatever app or, place that you're listening to this podcast on, you click that subscribe button or you click that follow button so you don't miss any episodes of Sports Spectrum's podcast. There's 1,000 episodes that are out there to listen to. We're releasing 3 a week every single week here on the show. So the best way to stay in touch with what we have going on is to subscribe or click that follow button on whatever app you listen to this podcast on. Thank you for tuning in. Make sure you tell someone about Sports Spectrum, and then please do join us next time for another episode here on the program. Today, we love you guys. Have a great rest of your day.